Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are going to be on a listen-only mode. During the question and answer session, please press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I now would like to turn the conference call over to Mr. Tom Skinner. And sir, you may begin.
Thanks, Karen, and thank you all for joining us once again for another release of a Vital Signs report. This one on central line associated bloodstream infections in the United States, years 2001, 2008, and 2009. Joining us today is the director of the CDC, Dr. Thomas Frieden, who will give some opening remarks. Also with us today is a medical epidemiologist from the Division of Healthcare Quality Promotion here at CDC, who will also be available to answer questions, Dr. Arjun Srinivasan, and that's spelled A-R-J-U-N, and then last name is S-R-I-N-I-V-A-S-A-N. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Frieden.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. When I was in my medical training, it was common to have central line infections, and it was considered an acceptable part of medical practice. We now have a new normal in healthcare, where central line infections are unacceptable and are seen as such, and we have seen and are reporting today dramatic progress saving lives and saving money by substantially reducing central line infections in intensive care units. Although these infections are still far too common, especially in hemodialysis centers, we think this is a model for improving healthcare, reducing infections, and improving healthcare more generally. I'll go into that in a little bit more detail over the next few minutes. Central line associated bloodstream infections remain far too common. There are about 80,000 per year in patients with central lines. Between 12 and 25% of those patients who have a central line infection may die. That means there are still at least 10,000 people per year in this country who die from central line infections. The impressive progress has been made in intensive care units, where we have data over the past 8 years, from 2001 to 2009. There were 58% fewer, nearly 60% fewer central line associated bloodstream infections in 2009 than there were in 2001. In that 8-year time period, that represents about 27,000 lives saved and about $1.8 billion in cumulative health care costs avoided. This is major progress, but the data being released today identifies still areas where much more progress is needed, particularly in hemodialysis centers. Hemodialysis is life-saving, but remains too risky. There are about 350,000 patients on dialysis every day in this country, and there were about 37,000 central line associated bloodstream infections among hemodialysis patients in 2008. That represents about one out of every 10 patients with on hemodialysis getting a life-threatening infection every year. Infection is the leading cause of hospitalization and the leading cause of death in hemodialysis centers, in hemodialysis patients, excuse me. So we have a long way to go, especially in hemodialysis. And this is particularly important because the number of patients on dialysis is expected to double in the next 10 years as more people with diabetes and as the population ages develop renal failure, more people will need dialysis, and it's even more important that we make dialysis safer. There are still also a large number of infections in inpatient units outside of intensive care units, and more progress can be made there. And we continue to think that we can make even more progress in intensive care units as well. This is a model that shows that progress is possible and should be expected in improving medical care. This has been done through a package that started with rigorous science to understand what are the problems and how to address them, led to very fruitful collaborations within the federal government, AHRQ, CMS, at state level, state governments are playing a central role in improving the safety of hospitals in their jurisdictions, and the private sector, from nonprofit organizations that have been involved to healthcare institutions themselves to others who have been leaders in driving down rates of hospital-associated or healthcare-associated infections. This is a model that we believe can be applied to not only other healthcare-associated infections, but also other conditions. Tracking infections is critical, and CDC does that through the National Healthcare Safety Network, which is now receiving information from more than 5,000 hospitals around the country. There are a couple of key messages that are important in this report for healthcare providers and for patients. Central lines and other lines should only be used when essential. And for patients on hemodialysis, there are better ways to get dialyzed for most patients. If patients begin the planning process early as their kidney failure gradually goes downhill, it's possible to start dialysis without ever using a central line. In fact, in many parts of the world, that's the norm, but in the U.S., unfortunately, that's the exception. Getting lines out as quickly as possible, not using them in the first place if they're not necessary, all very important. Accountability and transparency have been key to this progress, and we're fortunate that we're able to continue to make this kind of progress because of prevention dollars, and CDC is supporting state governments in reducing healthcare-associated infections through dollars that are available through the Prevention and Public Health Fund. This is a great example of saving lives and saving money through rigorous science, collaboration between public and private sector, and meticulous monitoring to determine what's being done, what's working, and then to focus on where we can make the most progress. So I'll stop there.
And okay. All right, Karen, I think we're ready for questions.
Okay, at this time we're going to open it up for question and answers. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. And one moment, please, for the first question.
While we're waiting for the first question, there's been some, just to clarify, a central line is a tube put into a large vein to give essential medicines or nutrition, or in the case of dialysis, to be used to remove and return the blood, to clean the blood in someone whose kidneys aren't working.
Catherine Hobson, your line is open. You may ask your question.
Hi, I have two quick questions. One of them is that I assume that you don't have the comparable historical figures for the non-ICU infections. And secondly, with those non-ICU settings in the hospital, the non-dialysis ones, can you explain what's going on there? Are those central lines that are inserted in the ICU and then the patients are moved, or are those central lines actually inserted in those other non-ICU wards?
Yeah, you're correct. We do not have comparative information for the inpatient units outside of the intensive care units, and while most of the lines would be inserted in the intensive care unit and then the patient would move to the floor or the non-intensive care unit part of the hospital, some would also be inserted in places, other places in the hospital.
Thanks.
Once again, Karen?
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Thank you. I have Bridget Kuhn from JAMA Medical News. You may ask your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The report notes that Staphylococcus aureus infections went down the largest amount. Was that MRSA infections or just staph? Why do you think that particular bacteria, infections caused by that particular bacteria were more affected than some of these other infections?
Thank you. Dr. Srinivasan will take this question.
Hi, yes, thank you. So that number in the vital signs report includes all Staph aureus, of which the methicillin-resistant Staph aurea is a subset, but the number in the report refers to all Staph aureus. And you're bringing up an important point, which is that the Staph aureus infections were decreased much more than the other types of germs, the bacteria that cause these central line-associated bloodstream infections. And the differences there are probably due to two main factors. One is that Staph aureus as a bacteria is more likely to be present on the skin when a catheter is put in. Mm-hmm. And so efforts that we have right now to improve the way that catheters are put in would impact Staph aureus more than others. The other factor that's probably reducing Staph aureus is the focus that I think you're alluding to on preventing methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, or MRSA, that's prevalent in many hospitals. So that combination of factors is likely reducing Staph aureus. But I think one of the other important points that this difference brings up is that we have to understand the differences in order to target our prevention measures most effectively. We say that you can't fix a problem that you don't know exists, and these differences between the pathogens points to the fact that we have to know the germ that's causing the infection so that we can optimally design better prevention to specifically target these ones that are not being reduced as much.
Thank you.
Karen, any more questions?
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. There are no... One moment, please. We do have a question from Denise Grady, New York Times. Your line is open. You may ask your question.
Thanks. I'm looking at Table 2 in the report. And one thing I see is that these estimates on the numbers, if I look at the intensive care units in 2001, it's possible that it goes from 27,000 up to 67,000. On 2009, it goes from 12,000 to 28,000. Now, if we took the lower limit on one and the higher limit on the other, then the overall number of infections actually would not have changed. So is it, or could even have gone up. So given the large variability in these numbers, how sure are we that there really has been this sizable improvement here?
Thank you for your question. We're very confident in the fact that the improvement is real. The ranges that you see in that table are ranges that would likely affect both sets of estimates. So, for example, if there were really 67,000 in 2001, they were probably closer to 28,000 in 2009, and respectively at the lower end, if there were 27,000, they were likely 12,000. The best estimate is probably the best estimate, which is that they were about 43,000 in 2001 and about 18,000 in 2009. This is very consistent with what we're seeing from a variety of other data sources, individual institutions, state-based initiatives, multi-state initiatives. It's very clear that from the standpoint of either an individual hospital or a hospital system or a state, that implementing a simple set of important prevention initiatives and policies can drive infection rates down by 50 to 80%.
Thank you.
Next question, Karen.
Haran Ranaika, Delaware News Journal, your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Is it possible to track data on the number of these types of infections in dialysis centers, and are you planning on doing this in the near future?
Yes, the report actually is the first report of this kind to track, and we are increasing the monitoring of dialysis centers and working with the professional societies and others, as well as CMS, to do that. This report clearly identifies dialysis centers as a major new frontier in the effort to reduce central line-associated bloodstream infections.
Next question, Karen.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. One moment, please.
Okay, if there are no more questions, I'll just emphasize again that what we're reporting today is very substantial progress, a 60% reduction, or near 60% reduction in intensive care unit infections, resulting in the prevention of 27,000 deaths and nearly $2 billion in healthcare costs, but the identification of significant need for further progress, especially in hemodialysis, where as many as 1 in 10 patients may get a central line infection every year. This progress, we think, in reducing intensive care unit infections should be a model for further progress in terms of rigorous science, meticulous monitoring, great collaboration within the federal government as well as with the healthcare industry and others, state governments having an essential role in reducing central line infections, and we think that this can make significant progress in further reducing healthcare-associated infections, which is an important priority for the healthcare system and a priority for the Department of Health and Human Services. And this is one of the places where we can not only improve the quality of medical care, but save a significant number of lives and a significant amount of money. Thank you all very much for your attention.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time.